Welcome back for the second module of the 74-325 Jumpstart. Yep. This is Chris Oakman, and I'm Steve Hall. We're your presenters still for the remainder of the day.
Welcome.
And this module is about user management in Office 365. One of the best things about Office 365 is that you don't have to be a heavy technical person to manage users within the Office 365 Admin Center. It's really easy to do, and I'm going to show you over the next 45 minutes how easy user management can be, and also some of the complex things that you can do. But the big thing is, it's really, really easy. You don't have to assign a technical resource to manage users anymore. So we're going to jump right down into the deck. And as you see, this is our second module for the day. We have six tomorrow. First and foremost, I'm going to show how to add a domain to Office 365.
Jump right in.
Well, if I can get into the demo, hold on a moment.
All right. So we're gonna jump right into demos on managing user in the Office 365 tenant as well as in PowerShell. So it should be a really good session for those of you that are here. We're excited about this. It's gonna take us a second. We've got kind of a unique configuration going here today. So Steven?
So we're back to our Office 365 dashboard here. And within the dashboard, we go to domains. If you're an admin, you see this as an admin, and actually the Office 365 Admin Center here. You simply click on domains, and for this purpose, we're using the office365demo.com. That is a domain that we own for this particular domain, or for this particular project. If I had a new domain, like, for example, I have a domain that says Steve Hall is king of the world, if I could type, world.com, you know, and I said, hey, I may own that domain. You just put it in here. It's going to say, now I have to confirm ownership. I might run into a problem here if I don't own that domain.
Right.
I have to go to my DNS provider, whether it be a network solutions type account, register, GoDaddy. Here are some that I can select from here or any other DNS host that I have, and I have to do whatever the steps are saying. It's saying, hey, that domain is not found. You don't own that domain.
Right.
Well, I don't. But if I did, I'm going to say, okay, well, Let's try to verify it. Let's continue the setup. It's going to tell me I need to create a text record or an MX record at my DNS registrar with this information in it. And as soon as I create that record, whether it be on a register.com type of account or GoDaddy or Network Solutions or other registrar, that information goes public to the internet.
Yep.
The Microsoft online service, Office 365, then checks that and sees that, hey, you created the record that I asked you to create. You must own that record. And what happens then is, I'll just go back to the portal. Wow. I'll just go back. Sorry, the configuration here is a little bit. So I go back to domains, and you'll see, just like with the office365demo.com, it'll say setup is in progress. I've already verified that I own the domain. And next, I have to say what I want to use the domain for. For Exchange Admin, I have to do certain things for Exchange Access and for SharePoint. And then the next step, it would say it's active, just like the office365demo.onmicrosoft.com. I do want to talk a little bit about this. When you set up for an Office 365 account, you are assigned a temporary, or it's a domain that's yours. It's whatever you want, .onmicrosoft.com.
Yeah, you can send and receive email from this domain.
And then you can go ahead and claim, you know, whatever vanity URLs or other domains you own.
Correct.
And assign those to users. So we're going to jump back into our PowerPoint.
There we go.
Sorry about that. It's a little bit different than it was last time.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about identities here.
It's not up.
All right. Give us a second. So the next thing we're going to talk about is identities. We're going to talk about, there it goes. We're going to talk about how to manage identities, different identities, how to sign in, and what it takes to sign in. I mean, a few technical difficulties, just bear with us.
Well, you can talk about the cloud.
I tell you what, let me answer a question. Somebody asked, where'd it go here? I just saw it. It was a good question. I wanted to answer it for you guys. Where is it? Oh, here's one. Do I need to pass a certification exam prior to offering delegated admin? No, but you need to be a cloud partner, and to do that, you need to have, I think, 100 users in the cloud, 100 you need to have a number of clients that are in the cloud that have Office 365 accounts. So we'll look that up and get the exact information before that delegated admin the partner page shows up. So
all right. Yep. Well, switching back.
Okay.
You know, sorry about the difficulty, guys. Switching back, we're just going to talk about identities. There are two major types of identities. You're either a cloud identity, meaning that your username, your login, your password exists purely in the cloud, in the Office 365 system. For example, mine is steve@districtcomputers.com. That identity exists purely in Microsoft's Office 365. I also have a separate credential where I log into my computer, whether it's my personal computer or my domain computer at my office. That's my local identity, and that's my cloud identity. There's also federated identities. The federated identity would be when I want my local credential that belongs to my computer or my domain, steve@dc.local, to be the same, yeah. Or sorry, not dc.local, steve@dc.com, yeah. To be the same as my Office 365 credential. And, you know, there are methods of setting that up, but that would be a federated identity where I have the single sign-on and the same ID whether I'm on my local machine or right. I'm in the cloud. So right. I only have to remember one password. And here are some common scenario usages. You know, a cloud identity would typically be for a smaller organization that does not have a heavy on-premise server deployment or no server at all.
Right.
You know, what are the disadvantages there? You don't have single sign-on. You don't have two-factor authentication options. But it does get you set up quick and easy in the cloud. Then there's the cloud identity plus, you know, directory synchronization. That would be where I have the same username on-premise on my local machine as the cloud, but I have separate passwords because technically it's two different identities, but I have the same login. So it's a little easier for people to remember. Maybe you only have one login. Maybe it's steve@districtcomputers.com wherever you log in.
Right.
But there may be two different passwords. Those don't stay in sync automatically.
Right. And that requires an on-premise server as well.
Yes, it does require an on-premise server. Then there is the third and the federated identity, and that's the true single sign-on where I have one login, one password, wherever I log in, whether it be the cloud for my cloud services or my local machine for my local machine services.
Right, and this requires multiple on-premise servers. So you're going to need Active Directory servers, Active Directory Federation servers, Directory Sync servers. You're going to need multiple servers to do the full federated hybrid scenario, federated identity.
So people keep asking, you know, well, what's going on? What pertains to the exam, what's the content? Something that's really important, I don't know if it's going to be on the exam or not, but it's really, really important to know. Whenever you create an identity, there are three required fields. And hopefully we can put this up on the screen because it's so important to know. You must have a display name, you must have a username, and you must put the user location in. You cannot create an identity inside the graphical user interface without those three pieces of information.
Right.
When you use PowerShell, however, our good friend PowerShell is back, you do not have to put in the location. It will prompt you when you log in as a
right.
user, I mean, as an admin for that user, but you do not have to create it with that. But those fields are necessary to create any user account in Office 365.
Yep. So remember that. It will be important.
And whether it's for just creating users or
right.
it's for maybe, you know, but sure. you have to have that because you can't create identities without that.
Right. Exactly.
So adding users, adding groups. There are three ways to provision users. You can create them in the Office 365 Admin Center. You can synchronize them from your local directory. Or you can create them using PowerShell.
Okay.
Sorry about that, guys. So yep. What is the 365 Admin Center? How do we create users? Once we're logged into the Admin Center, we go to Users and Groups and the Navigation Panel. And from here, it's simple. There's the Active Users, where we can go and add users. We can look up properties for users. We can filter and find users. We can go and delete users from here. Or we can go to security groups, check the groups, and we can check who the delegated admins are, who has permissions to what other users. If we want to go in and find a user or select a user, for example, we want to find Tony Montana. Scarface got into our demo somehow. If we want to go in and edit him, we simply select Tony Montana from the group. We come over here and we select edit, or we can delete Tony. We can reset his password. And we can look into his exchange properties or his link properties.
Yep.
Now, if we want to talk about, you know, folks that are have Active Directory synchronization,
mm-hmm.
if, for example, at East Ridge, they have directory synchronization, we can simply come in our users and groups, and we can say, look, let's set up single sign-on. Or let's set up Active Directory synchronization. And from there, it'll give us some instructions for how to set that process up.
Correct.
Big thing here. This is huge. A new feature in Office 365, the current version of Office 365. The ability to set and change password timeout maximums or expiration maximums and minimums. I believe the maximum duration of password is 730 days now.
730.
2 years.
Yep.
So that can be set simply by clicking change now. And if we have time in the demo, I will go through that. And the minimum time is 14 days. We get asked all the time.
Right.
Can we change the timeout setting? Can we change the timeout setting? The 5 passwords a year kill me. The 4 passwords a year kill me. Well, here you can set it for yourself. You can set it for all the users in your domain without having to, you know, get an expensive IT guy to do it. Or you can do it yourself for all your customers, depending if you're a partner or not.
Right.
It really gives you guys the power to do the things that we've been able to do for years on-premise in the cloud very easily.
Now, you can still change in PowerShell, you can still change per user password policies as well.
Yep.
So you can still set, for instance, you want one user, maybe your admin account, well, maybe not your admin account, but maybe an account that you want to set, you can set it for the password not to expire, and it overrides that time period in the console. So.
Yep. Creating passwords. So when you create them in the Office 365 Admin Center, you simply check the box, say reset user password. It's going to give you an auto-generated password, which will require the user to change the password on the next login, correct?
Yep.
If you're using the PowerShell, you have the ability to create a login or create a password, manually set a password at that, or you can create an auto-generated password, and you can say it has to be reset on the next login, or you can make it stick.
Right.
So you have some more flexibility with PowerShell, but yes, you can do the same tasks with the Office 365 Admin Center. Here, right here, is the actual command. If you want to set a user password, it's set Microsoft Online user password, whatever the user's name is, the user principal name. That's the entire login. For example, steve@districtcomputers.com would go in the user ID field. And we say, okay, the new password will be whatever that password is going to be. And then I would have set my password. Now, if I do not actually add this force change or force change password equals false, then I'll be prompted to change my password on my next login. But if I do set this last flag for force change password false, I would not be required to change my password. I could make that say true, and you can do that for some users or not other users. So if, for example, we were setting up 50 new users, and we needed to set their Outlook properties up for them, we can go in and set their password to a temporary password,
yep.
Log them all in, synchronize their mail, come back in and change them to reset with the next login, so they're already set, ready to go before they... before they do anything. Now, I'm going to show you guys that right now in a demo, if I can switch screens successfully this time.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what we can do. While you're switching screens, I'm going to answer a couple questions.
Great.
So one of the questions was, and I answered it, was about Small Business Server 2011. Could you use DirSync with Small Business Server 2011? The answer is yes. It has to be a separate server. Cannot be installed on a domain controller. And we're going to get much more into Directory Sync in the next module, so stay tuned for that. Let's see. I had another question here I wanted to answer. I saw it come up a second ago. Can I use E1 license to create and access rights protected documents? So stay tuned for SharePoint tomorrow. We'll talk more about that. And if we don't answer that question during the SharePoint module, ask it again in the Q&A. We'll have a SharePoint engineer online tomorrow. So I just want to let everybody know that. Now there's a question here, when will the exam be released? Next month or so. It should be out sometime this summer. So, big question here. Can you turn a trial into production without reconfiguring? Absolutely. So as you saw in my first module, I showed you my oakman.net domain. I started that as a trial, and then I purchased some licenses and moved my users to those purchased licenses. Now here's a big one, and I've seen this mistake made many, many times. An admin will go in, they will remove the license from the trial account, so they'll uncheck the box, hit save, and then they'll go back in and check the box again. They just deleted the mailbox when they did that. So that's a big no-no when that happens. If you uncheck a box for a license, hit save, it's going to delete that mailbox. Now, it is recoverable, but there's quite a number of steps you need to go through to recover that mailbox. So that's a big no-no, is to uncheck a box for a license and then hit the save button. So, okay.
So for the purposes of this demo, I am assuming the new identity of Karen Berg. Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Berg. And I just received an email from Steve Hall. And this email is telling me, as soon as I log into my Office 365 Outlook web app, it's telling me, hey, Steve sent me an email. Please set up the following users on their Outlook by the end of the day. And it's, he sent me 20 users for some reason. Now, I could go into the Office 365 portal and set the passwords one at a time, which would probably take quite a few minutes to go in, set them, go to the Office 365 portal, reset their password, go in and set up Outlook, set up, provision Outlook on their machines, come back in, reset the passwords again, so when they come in, they'll have a machine ready to go and a password that needs to be set.
Right.
Or I could simply take PowerShell. I have to log into the PowerShell service.
And what command are you typing?
Connect.msol service, which will connect me to the Office 365 service.
And then prompt you for username and password.
Yep. In this case, I'm going to use our demo admin account. If I can remember the...
Now, you've got some, on the right-hand side of your screen, it looks like you've got some pre-created scripts.
Glad you said that.
Yeah.
So, after I connect to the actual Microsoft Online Services, to connect to Microsoft Exchange would require another set of commands.
Right.
It would require me, to the Exchange Online, it would require me to go in and type these commands.
Right.
You know, I could do that every time, but that would also cause me to have to be a better typer, and I don't type that well. So what I like to do is drag and drop things. I went ahead and typed this one time. I saved it as a .ps1 file, which is a PowerShell script. Now I can simply change my directory that I'm operating in. And I can drag this over here. It's going to prompt me again for my credential.
Right, because you're now connecting to Exchange.
I'm connecting to Exchange.
You connected to the Office 365 tenant the first time. Now it's prompting you again to connect to Exchange.
Of course, on my machine, the username is saved in there, and I can
select
that a lot faster. Put in my password again, and it's going to connect me to the actual Exchange online service, and it's going to load those modules for PowerShell.
Right.
Now, what I want to do, I took those same users that Steve Hall emailed to me. Remember, I'm Karen Berg now. And I simply put them, saved them as a CSV file, which hopefully I can. You see, there's the identity, and those are the usernames.
Yep.
It's Molly C, Julie and I. These are the common usernames from an Office 365 demo that we use. Now that I've used those, set those users, I want to go in and I want to set all of their passwords to, let's just say, I love Office 365.
Okay.
Now, what would that look like? I would have to type a command out that would be set Microsoft Online user password, user principal name, the actual user identity, put a new password in, I love Office 365, and in this case, I want to force change password to actually be false. The reason we're doing that is so we can now change those usernames, change those passwords, go in, set up their Outlook, and then be done with it, and then set them back to true. So I'm going to now drag and drop this over here. And as you see, it's setting the passwords. So everybody loves Office 365.
That's pretty cool.
And eventually there should be 15 or 16 or 20 of them, however many usernames there are. Now that we've done that, we can go in, log into their computer, set up their Office or Outlook profile, download all their mail, go back. I can change the password back to set the flag to false, have them come in, set their new password, and they're all set up and ready to go without me having to log in 20 times.
Right.
So
exactly.
That was a pretty easy to
good
use
job,
demo.
But I charge by the hour, so I still like to use a GUI.
But, you know, do it however you want. If the GUI's your way of doing it, you can take your time and do it. I like to get things done fast.
Right.
I talk fast. I walk fast. I like to work fast, too.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. So I'm going to get back to the actual slide deck. If you can answer some questions while we're doing
that. So somebody asked, is there a local Exchange Management Console that can be installed on a server to administer Exchange mailboxes? No. It's all done through Office 365 and the admin console. There's not the Exchange admin control panel or that you used to be able to install on a, you could even install it on a Windows 7 workstation to manage Exchange for on-premise. That no longer exists, and that no longer exists in the Exchange on-premise version of Exchange either. So that's no longer available. It's now 100% web-based.
Yep.
So.
All right, so you know, going back to the actual password management, I want to show you guys what some of the commands were. I always get asked questions, well, how did you do it? What are the commands? Well, here they are right here. The basic constructs of the commands that I typically use and that are typically used for passwords. Hopefully we can present these and show everybody. So, simple. If you want a password, you know, as I showed you this already, but if you want to set a username and set it to never expire, this command right here. It's not recommended to set a password to never expire. Let me just throw that out there now. That's a terrible practice, but
right,
I want to
right.
make sure
you... it can be done.
But it can be done,
right.
And this is how it's done.
Right. And you do still, and I still get them every day that, you know, you have that small business, they set all their passwords to password back in 1998 when they got their first server, and guess what? It's still the same thing today. So
we see it all the time. Yeah. But you can still do that. If you want to, you know, administer bad practice, you can say Steve Hall and Chris Oakman showed you how. The one I do want to show you guys is that let's say you go into an environment and you want to know what users have passwords that are not expiring. This command right here is pretty important.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily needed for the purposes of testing, but it's a great, great, great command to know.
Right.
So you can just go in and evaluate what's going on here. Do we have users that are following bad practice? And
right.
this is how you can determine that. If you can get into PowerShell, you go in and log in and run this command, and it'll tell you who has passwords that are never going to expire.
Right.
Also, you can set it for all people to expire or never expire.
Right. And remember, people, your email is online. It's in the cloud. Yeah. So you want to make sure that you have a good, solid password policy in force. And you want to change your password. You need to change that password as frequently as you can afford to in your organization, but you want to make sure you change that. You don't want to set them to never expire.
But a practical application, I lost my phone. I can't tell you how many times we get, I lost my phone or I left my laptop and it was logged in. Good time to go in and change password.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you may have, there may be an instance, maybe you have a, maybe you've set up a user account that allows you to relay a copier, all right?
Yep.
To copy or send in PDF files out of its system. And so that maybe that account you might want to, could set for never expire. But in general, for a user account, you don't want to do that.
Well, I know that we're flying through these slides, and
yep.
I wonder, are there any questions coming through the queue
before
we go into user management?
There's a lot about DirSync, and if people just hang on, we're gonna go through DirSync in the next module pretty in depth. So,
well, let's talk about the roles then.
Sure, let's go into roles.
All right, so there are built-in user roles and administration roles for Office 365, and I'm gonna go ahead and load them so we can just talk about them.
Yep.
So there's the overall tenant admin or the global administrator. That person has administrative access to everything in the tenant. The role is assigned to the initial person that's sets the account up, and you can assign admin permissions to other people. He's the big admin. He's
right.
the king admin, the administrator. Of course, there's the billing administrator. Now, this is a person that can see the bill, view the bill, but does not have access to everybody else's attributes.
Right.
You can't go in and
change
create
passwords.
Other users, change passwords, but you get the notifications about the billing, and you can take care of the billing.
Yeah.
Pretty important role.
Right.
The user account admin can go in and see all the properties to other users, and they can make some changes there, but they cannot touch the billing.
Right.
They can't touch the tenant admins or the global admin. The help desk admin has the ability to do everything except reset the passwords of the admins, and cannot go in and make billing, but he can basically manage users, regular users' passwords.
Right.
I believe can create tickets.
Yep.
I believe so. Then there's a service support admin who can actually go in and manage individual services, but cannot change attributes for other users beyond that.
Yeah.
And those are really, really, really important to know what roles you can assign to who, because often we have people that simply need to reset passwords and don't need access to other things, and a lot of times people will make everybody a global admin, which is a terrible practice. We've seen some things where people that should not be global admins are global admins, and they cause some pretty big problems, like deleting users by accident, like you were saying earlier.
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
I should uncheck that guy. He doesn't have an Exchange mailbox anymore. Oh, boom, he's gone.
Yep. Right.
So it's really important to understand what roles you're assigning to different people when you're assigning administrative roles.
Yep.
Oh, and then the user. Sorry, I forgot about the user himself or herself. That's just the default user role. You know, you have a mailbox, you have an account, you can log into the services, but you cannot administer anything for anyone.
Yeah. I want to take a time out for a second. We got a note in. We want to talk about the Office 365 community, and it's a good place to find all these scripts that Steve was using in PowerShell. The Office 365 community is a great place to find information on that. If there's a script you need, somebody's already written one and shared one out there. So make sure you check that out. There's scripts out there to do just about all of the functions in Office 365 through PowerShell. So somebody's written those. You'll have to modify them for your particular tenant, but there's a lot of information out there.
Cool. Okay? So we talked about the role groups. But now I want to talk about the actual role itself. This one chart right here really breaks down exactly what can be done by each role. And these are the actual names of the roles that are assigned. So when you create a user or assign a role, you can make them a billing administrator, a global administrator, a password administrator, a service administrator, or a user management administrator. The previous was the role group. This is the actual role itself that you assign to a user. That is very important to know.
Yep.
So in understanding what each user or role can actually do. And this is the actual breakdown. And if that does change or update, here is a link. But as of today, this is still the current permissions.
It is current. So, this hasn't changed a lot from the previous version to Wave 15, but, we want to cover this again. I can almost guarantee you'll see this information again.
Yeah, but it's so important. I mean, like I said before, you really want to know who has access to what, and you want to be careful for who you assign to what.
Yep.
I was going to actually show the actual portal itself and go into some user and drilling down into the users themselves.
Yep.
So I'm going to get back into my actual.
Okay. While you're doing that, I'm going to answer. So the link to the Office 365 community was just posted in the Q&A. So for some of you that were asking about that, and somebody asked if the demo scripts will be available. They are all in the community. So. And a link was posted for that.
I'll put up the ones that I use in this
demo.
I'll certainly share those out and make sure that I put them in there so you can drag and drop the same way.
Yep.
I will delete the actual identity names that are in the CSV files, so you'll have to populate those yourself.
Yep.
But I'll certainly put those up there so you can use them just like I use them in the demo.
Yep.
If we can view my my screen.
Great.
So, users and groups. I talked about it and I showed pictures of it, but I'm going to actually click through. This is our demo account. We're inside of the Office 365 Admin Center in the Users and Groups, and I can see my list of active users. If I just choose to no longer like Greg Winston, I can simply select Greg Winston, and I can delete Greg Winston.
Make sure you only have Greg Winston checked.
Yeah, I hope so. If not, I may have deleted everybody. So now Greg is gone. Boom. Goodbye.
Now hit the next tab over up there. Just so people can see that at the top.
If I want to restore Greg Winston, I simply go to deleted users. I track Greg, and I restore him. And now Greg is back as an active user. Let's just make sure Greg is still here. Here he is. You'll notice that all of these users have the Office 365 demo.onmicrosoft.com as their login address or username. It's because I have not updated them when I added that domain, but I'll show you how that's done. We'll pick on Amy this time. If we want to update Amy, we simply click on Amy, and we go to details. Details say who she is, what her username is, and this is where we can select all the verified domains that I have will appear here. In this case, I want her to now log in as amya@theoffice365demo.com. Press save, and now she has a new login. If I want to go back to Amy and pick on her some more, for some reason, Amy... we don't want her to have access to Office 365 Pro Plus. We just uncheck 365 Pro Plus from the licensing, but we do want her to have access to the other services. And when I do this now, she will no longer have the option to download Office 365 Pro
Plus. Now, something I wanted to throw out there for everyone is, let's say you have an employee. They've installed Office Professional Plus on 5 computers, and you've terminated that employee. Well, in the past, if you had given them 5 copies of Office, they were pretty much gone. It was hard to recover those. Yeah. With Office 365, as soon as you uncheck that, when they log in and try to use Office, it's going to go into read-only mode. So it's still going to be installed on their machines. They'll be able to open Word documents, Excel documents, but they will not be able to save them.
Office 365.
Well, the service will not be able to edit.
Yeah, the service checks every time it opens up.
Every time Office opens up, it checks to see if that's a valid user.
Or is there a valid user on the machine?
Yep.
And back in the demo, we can go check our groups, our security groups. This just shows there's a distribution group called All Employees. By default, you can make distribution and security groups, and they'll appear here. Delegated admins. In this case, so going back to the, if you are a partner and you become a delegated administrator, for example, District Computers is a delegated admin for this tenant, yep. And they appear here. If for some reason we change partners or we change our delegations, we can simply select District Computers and remove them, and they will no longer have access to our tenant if I am an end user or if you're switching tenants
or
somebody
else. Yep.
Let's see what else can we do with the users. Let's go back to Amy again since we've been picking on her. Settings. All right, so if we want to make Amy an admin now, Amy may have just bought the company, and now she needs to be a global admin.
Right.
We take her from no, she's not an administrator, has no permissions, to say yes, let's give her some permissions. Here's where we can actually select. Is she a billing admin? No, she's a global admin, but you can select whichever one you want. You'll notice as soon as you do that, you must put an outside email address in. This happens to be because she's an administrator, she can call in for support. If she has she forgets her password, she's able to call in or get a password reset, and Microsoft Online Services support will use that address to contact her or to send her email.
Right.
To email her login and password.
So it's very, very important to use a valid external
So address. You could use a Outlook.com address, a live address, any address you have that's right. Outside of your Office 365 tenant. If for some reason, you know, Amy's on probation or no longer needs to be able to log in, you just don't want to delete her account, you can just block her so she can't access any of the services.
Right. It used to be that you would change the password, right?
Exactly.
If you terminated a user, you'd change their password because you want their email to come in, maybe forward their email to somebody else. And now you can just block login.
And if for some reason she's not in the same, she's not in the United States, she could be in the UK.
Right.
You can select her country. But remember what I said earlier, you must select a location when you set a user up.
Right.
We talked about licenses already. What we didn't talk about is I need more information. I need to add maybe I need to add some exchange information. I need to add an alias. I need to give her mailbox properties, delegation to somebody else. I would do that under exchange properties.
Right. And it used to be that you had to go into the exchange admin console in order to do this. You had to connect to that. Now you can do it right from the user account.
Simple. Easy to do. Yep. That's really the whole thing with Office 365, simplified user management and service management. Same thing with Link. If she does not need to be able to talk to people on the outside, or she does, or she needs other permissions, right. I can edit her Link properties specific to her, not specific to the entire tenant or all the users. Same thing would go if I, you know, wanted to change her from a administrator to a regular user.
Right.
Same thing. And that's pretty much user management in a nutshell. Have there been any more questions that have come in?
So here's one that came in. Does the licensing checking mean my copy of Office 2013 would be set to read only if I take my laptop on my boat for a vacation with no internet access? So the answer to that is no, because you logged into your computer using your valid
There is a time period.
Identity.
Well, there's a time
and there
period.
Is a time period. It's not necessarily immediate, but there is a time period there.
So, 30 days.
And it might be 30 days. We're not positive, but
we'll look that up for you.
We'll look it up and put it on there. So there's a 30-day time period, and just like you can log into your laptop off of the domain, so you've taken your laptop out of the domain, you don't have internet access at home, you're wherever you happen to be, you can still log into your office, into your laptop, use Office, and it's a good 30 days before it puts it into read-only mode. And you'll know as soon as it does. It'll pop up and say Office is now in read-only mode.
The one thing that I did forget to show, and I talked about when we were clicking through the slides, was changing the password expiration policy. So
right.
If we can, you know, go back to the screen, I'll happily show that right now. From the same 365 Admin Center, under Users and Groups still, change the password expiration policy for your users. This is a global setting. You simply click on Change Now. And you can set the up to, what is it, 730?
Yep, it'll tell you.
So I'm going to set it for 9,000 days. And
right.
Let's see what it says. It's going to say, no, you can't do that.
Yep.
It has to be between 14 and 730. So yep. I've now changed it to 2 years. And this tells, you know, 14 days out, it'll start reminding you.
Yes,
your
sir.
Password's going to expire in 14 days. If we're saying 2 years, we'll give them a 1 week reminder. I've saved that, and now I've changed the expiration policy for my entire domain.
So someone asked, is global administrator the same as tenant administrator?
Yes.
Yes.
The global administrator is the actual role. The tenant administrator is the role group.
The role group. Yep. All right.
I mean, well, we've covered the actual user administration Okay. And I know we covered it pretty quickly, and I know it, you know, hurt you guys to get a shorter module, but I believe that unless there are other questions coming in, we're going to give you guys about 10 minutes back.
Yeah, let's answer some of these questions. Can somebody ask, can you roll out Office 365 applications to client machines via group policy?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, you can. Yep. You can do a remote install. Microsoft likes to use Windows Intune to do that. It's a great tool to use to roll out Office.
If you're on domain, you can use your domain policies.
Yep.
So here's a good one. Do you pay for blocked users? You can have as many users as you want in your tenant. You only pay for licensed users. So
right.
If there's an actively applied license to that user, or you pay for as many licenses as you have per month. So you can have 2,000 users and only have 15 licenses. You're paying for 15 licenses.
Yep. Exactly. Do shared calendars require their own license?
No. We'll get to that tomorrow in the Exchange module.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the Exchange module. But shared calendars, distribution groups, shared email addresses, all that do not require.
All that comes with the service.
Somebody asked, is Microsoft doing away with the Exchange server on-premise? Absolutely not. No, it is still there, big and strong. Exchange 2013 is the new on-premise version. All right.
How easy is it to change someone's name when somebody gets married or divorced? I'll do that right
that's
now.
That's a great one, yeah.
We can do that live. So we're going to jump back into my portal. We're going to go back into users, and we're going to pick on Amy again. Amy Alberts. I think that we're going to change Amy Alberts to Amy Alberts Hall. I may have just married her. I don't know.
All right.
So her display name.
You married yourself.
Oh, well, whatever. So if we want to change, we've changed here. We kept her first name the same. We've added the hyphen Hall. We've changed the display name to Amy Alberts Hall. And her username we may want to change to Amy H now. I press save. And that's done.
Now, what if I wanted to make sure that she still got her old email at her old address?
Okay. I'll preview some of the Exchange for tomorrow.
We can get into
that
tomorrow.
No, we'll do that right now. No, that's perfect. So I click on Amy Albert Talk, because that's certainly going to be asked next.
Right. That'll be the next question.
And we go down to More. We go to Edit Exchange Properties. And you'll notice that the Exchange Admin Center will be opening up, hopefully.
Okay.
And her user properties are here. I'm going to go down to her email addresses. And you'll notice Amy A is here. Amy H is not populated yet. But it will. Typically, it takes a few minutes. It'll keep her legacy addresses, so all of these will stay, and it'll add the Amy H address, or alias. So she'll have the Amy H as her primary, as her reply to address, and it'll have Amy A as her alias address at that point. So it automatically creates that. And I can go ahead and add more. Amy AH. Amy Hall. You know, whatever it may be, we can keep adding aliases, and I'll simply add Amy Hall, just because I feel like typing my last name. At the office365demo.com. And I could change to make this the reply, but her default is going to be whatever her login name will be her default reply address.
Great.
And now Amy Hall is there. And if I waited a few minutes, it'll populate the Amy H. Save, and we're done with Amy.
Somebody asked if there are any plans in getting the virtual labs for larger migrations. If you're a Microsoft partner and you can get an invite to Ignite training events, they're usually much more deep dives
hands-on deep dives
into.
And those travel.
Yeah.
They travel to some cities. I don't know when they are, but you can look
they
them
do.
Up online.
There was one in Chicago. Chicago, I believe, in January, February,
Miami,
in
April.
Mm-hmm.
But they happen. The road shows happen, and you just have to look online for that information.
Correct. So I just want to throw out there: what happens when a user leaves the organization? How soon can I do a directory sync and stop from accessing the network? So we're going to get into directory sync later today.
But we can answer that.
But we can answer that real quick. It can be immediate. So. As soon as that user is, you can do one of two ways.
Uncheck.
If the user's leaving, you don't care about their email, you can uncheck their license. If they're, if you want to hang on to their email for a little bit, you can block them
or change their password.
Or change their password. So you still have that option as
and
well.
Give somebody else access if you have
yep.
to. It's still Exchange. Exchange
yep.
is Exchange.
Yep.
And it's an Active Directory. It's just hosted, so it's still Active Directory.
Yep.
Okay. Any more questions flowing through, or want to give them some?
That's good. Let's catch up.
We'll wrap up
about 10 minutes. We'll start at the top of the hour. So, sounds good. Thanks,
everybody.
Thank you very much. See you in a bit.